This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Welcome to Recode Media with Peter Kafka. That is me. And in a minute, you're going to hear me talking to Josh Sapan. He is the CEO of AMC Networks about his efforts to turn that cable TV company, these are the guys who brought you Mad Men and Breaking Bad and The Walking Dead, into a streaming video company like everybody else. And how he's trying to do that while TV ratings are just collapsing. I mean, it's quite shocking when you talk to him about where The Walking Dead used to be and where it is now, even though it's still the number one hit on TV. And also trying to do that while everyone else, as you all know, is trying to get into streaming and have a lot more resources than AMC has. It is a good conversation. Josh is always good to listen to. Before we do that, really quickly, wanted to talk about Spotify for a couple reasons. First one, some newsy stuff coming. There's a very good chance Spotify is going to get a ruling from the European Union in its fight against Apple over an antitrust complaint. I think the thinking is that Spotify feels that they're going to get a good ruling. And depending on how that plays out, it could be a big deal for services like Spotify, who complain that Apple treats them unfairly in its app store. It's part of a wave of antitrust stuff coming towards Apple. Another big one is its lawsuit with Epic Games, which starts next week. We'll be covering that as well. So it's just worth keeping an eye on. I'm sure if the news rolls out, we'll end up talking about it on this show in the very near future. And also wanted to just mention that, like we flagged last week, Spotify has unveiled its subscription podcast plans. That comes a week after Apple released its podcast subscription plans. There are some differences in the way the two companies are going about it. Notably, Spotify is charging much less than Apple is, at least for the first couple of years. But really, the big takeaway here is that both companies are doing this, and I think it is good for podcasting. Even if you don't want to sell subscriptions to your podcast or buy someone's subscriptions to a podcast, it's good to have that option there. It means you've got a business that was entirely ad-driven, almost entirely ad-driven, and now is going to have more than one revenue stream, which I think is pretty healthy. It's good to have competing platforms sort of duking it out over this. That's good for listeners. It's good for podcasters. It's nice to have good news, right? I don't know that people want to pay for podcasts. We're going to find out. And we will certainly be talking about that in the weeks and months to come, as we say. Okay, that's my preamble. Let me know about what you think about these preambles, too. Should we keep doing them, or should we just get right to the interview? Now, we're going to get right to the interview with Josh Sapan. I'm talking to Josh Sapan. He is the CEO of AMC Networks. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you, Peter.
We talked 2 years ago. We were in an office.
We were
at Vox Media headquarters. Now I'm in my bedroom. You look like you're in someone's room.
I'm in the attic.
Okay,
yes.
You're in the attic. That's the proper place to do a podcast. Let's start there. We're recording from home. Usually in the last year, I've asked people how they fared in the pandemic. We're nearing the end of it, at least in America. What did the pandemic do to your plans that you had 14 months ago? What accelerated? What went on pause? What had to go away?
Yeah, I don't think that we slowed anything meaningful down. It was like I think for others, I was surprised by how rapid our adjustment was. And during the pandemic, we reorganized the company. We launched new streaming products. We hired key people to join the company. It was surprising to me that we could function so well remotely. And actually, I was particularly surprised by when I mentioned new products, because I actually had theorized that we would, our collaboration and our creative new stuff might slow, but it didn't. So
if I asked you in February of 2020 where things would look like in April of 2021, it's kind of what you thought. That's amazing.
Well, it's a little better than what I thought. Yes, honestly, really, it's a little better than what I thought, and that surprises me. Yes,
you guys do. You're almost primarily in the cable TV and streaming business. You do have a movie theater in New York, IFC right. Theater. Is that open now? I should know.
Yes, it's open now.
Okay,
under strict guidelines, but it is open right now. Yes.
When's the last time you went to see a movie in a theater?
It was pre-pandemic.
Yeah, mine was February 2020. I saw the Sonic the Hedgehog movie at the Mall of America in suburban Minneapolis. I'm not sure when I'm going back. Let's talk about where the business is today. The last time we talked a lot about streaming. We'll get to talk about streaming here because I think you guys have sort of made a point of saying, I don't know if you use the word pivot, but you're sort of embracing streaming in a way that you weren't 2 years ago. And the numbers you rattle off these days, that you've got 6 million subscribers to various streaming services. I think you could, did you say 9 million by the end of this calendar year?
That's right. Yeah.
And then by 2025, it's going to be the biggest revenue generating segment for your business.
That's exactly right.
Which is different than saying the majority, but it'll be the biggest segment.
That's right.
So is this a shift that you saw coming 2 years ago, 3 years ago? Did it move faster than you thought?
Yeah. So just by way of background, I hope it's responsive to your question. We had entered the targeted streaming area several years ago because we felt and anticipated largely happily correctly that there would be major vessels, if you want to call them, of subscription services, as we anticipated it, not necessarily supported by commercials, which turned out to be reasonably accurate. And we believed that given who we are, what AMC Networks is, what our history is, that we could offer targeted services that would be purchased in addition to the major SVOD or vessels.
You're using targeted as a synonym for niche, just so we're clear.
Yeah, I think niche is a fair word. And so we had launched, just to get very specific, we launched a service called Sundance Now, and we launched a service called Shudder. That was several years ago. Sundance Now has sort of documentaries. It has foreign series. It has wonderful series. It has material like that. And Shudder was devoted to horror, to say it very simply. So to your question, we began last year at about a little over 2 million subscribers and ended the year at 6 million subscribers, which in the world today, compared to the likes of the big vessel services, those are small numbers, but for us, they're big numbers against our size. So we advanced and accelerated our launch of new services. We had acquired a majority interest in a company, and we launched something called AMC Plus. So AMC Plus joined Sundance Now, Shudder, and then Acorn, which we had arrived at through acquisition, and a service called All Black. All Black and Acorn were part of a company that we purchased a majority interest in, and they were integrated into our company. And then AMC Plus became a new commercial-free subscription service you could buy along with those services that gives you a couple of them along with it. What brought us from 2 to 6.
What's your most successful targeted / niche service? It seems like it's Shudder, but you tell me.
Yeah, well, successful is a relative term, not to be cute. The service that had the most subscribers is Acorn, the British-oriented service. And I guess it is the longest running, if you want to call it that, although Shudder has had this straight-on trajectory of growth. And then we launched, and this goes back to your pandemic question, during the pandemic, a brand new service called AMC Plus, which, if it's of interest, gives one a couple of those services, not all of them, but you don't get
it's a mini bundle, basically.
It's like a mini bundle, exactly. Thank you for using that word, along with select AMC product. And it's normally priced at $8.99 or so. And that took off, like, for us, against our size, I would say a rocket. And it surpassed our expectations in a few short months of operation.
We're going to talk about scale throughout this conversation. This is a good place to start. you guys are doing niche targeted services because it sounds like a good idea, and also because you have to, right? You can't compete with the Netflixes and Disneys in terms of tonnage, in terms of library, and also what they're spending on new programming. That's self-evident. I'm curious, why do you think the big guys haven't also tried niche services? NBC Universal did this a couple years ago with CISO. It was a comedy service. Kind of seems like a good idea to me that if there's something I'm passionate about, I know what it is, I'm willing to pay extra for it. Why do you think the big services have not tried to do add-ons and say, all right, here's for an additional $5, here's a comedy or horror or whatever it is?
Yeah. You know, I can't completely go inside what they might be thinking, but a number of them, number of different companies have done them and ceased operation. You mentioned one. There was another one in the Shudder area or Shudder arena that started and then stopped. And for us, what I would say is it's both desirable. It's in our genetics. We've had the notion for 5 years, but frankly, Chuck Dolan had the notion 40 years ago of exactly this. And even our linear cable channels, when they were birthed, had as their premise, and this is important, we are going to super serve an audience. We are going to be their place of choice. We are going to be what they're passionate about. We're going to be what they identify with. We're going to be what they consume and go to and like. And hopefully that goes beyond, there's just a show there that I like right now. It goes to, I'm going to find material that I like there all the time. And they have authority in that area. I rely on them to discover material for me and serve it up. They do things that are inventive, and they speak to me in a voice that matters to me and sounds resonant in that area. I know that that's a lot to undertake, but a reason why a very large company that is out to get $250 million plus worldwide SVOD subscribers would not want to do something that we're doing is it takes a very certain and focused amount of energy. It may or may not be material to their economics, or it may not work within their ecosystem. So if you're in a business that is significantly shopping and you have a video component, or if you're in the cellular business and you have a video business, then targeted, or as you call them, niche services may not be central or sympathetic to what you want to accomplish. We are a company for whom that is absolutely central. We are a media company that is a content company, and the very thing we are is to be the choice and the go-to place if you're a horror fan, if you want to see some authority in African-American, et cetera.
Yeah, AT&T has Crunchyroll, which by all counts to be is a successful service. They do anime, and they're trying to sell it for a price. I think it's equivalent to your market cap, give you sort of a sense of scale. The idea that you guys knew how to do niche stuff because you did it with the existing channels, IFC, Sundance, AMC, those work because I got those channels whether I wanted to or not. They're part of the bundle. And I didn't care about AMC when it was kind of undifferentiated movies, American Movie Classics, and then I did once it had Mad Men and Breaking Bad. So how do you convince someone to pay an extra $5, $6, $10 when there's a million things they can choose from on Netflix, a lot of which does overlap with what you have? And by the way, a lot of the stuff is stuff that's on that you're programming now, right? I can see Breaking Bad is still on, is off the air, but it's on Netflix. I've been rewatching it recently. Better Call Saul, I wait for that to come to Netflix usually before I watch a season. How do you convince me to pay for something that I either can get on the other services eventually, or there's some sort of substitute?
Yeah. Well, you know, do you mind if you can indulge me? I'm going to answer with a couple of anecdotes.
I can't stop you. You're on the internet. You just keep talking. Go for it.
You know, someone said to me that they know someone who they think, quote, discovered Acorn. Mm-hmm. And they said, so they watched Bloodlands, and then they watched Foyle's War, and then they watched Midsummer Night Mysteries, and then they watched Agatha Christie, and it spoke to them, and they think they discovered the service that was for them. I spoke to somebody else much younger, and they said, everyone in my office gets on the phone and they talk about horror movies like other people talk about sports. And they have points of reference and they talk about scenes. And then in other worlds, there's a show in the Sundance Now world. There's a show, two shows. One is called The Restaurant, which is in a foreign language, which has a fierce constituency. And people are loving it. So I think that the answer to your question about why these things work is they may have, they put on show, we put on shows that you can't find anywhere else. And we put on a depth of them that you can't find anywhere else. And they are reliable in their editorial screen. So you're not shopping in, and I don't mean this disparagingly, in a big box store and seeing what appeals to you this week or this month. You're going to Lululemon and you're buying that stuff because you like that stuff. And you know that it's high quality and you know that it's well done. And it is a very different experience.
Netflix, recording this, I think a week after their earnings, maybe less than a week after their earnings. And they said, you know, we signed up, they didn't quite put it this way. They said, we basically signed up everyone who's going to get Netflix in the near term last year, last spring during the pandemic. And they missed their numbers. You guys did well last year. Do you think, and you're saying, look, we're going to continue doing well this year, but does the Netflix performance give you any pause that maybe there was a rush of subscribers last spring and maybe everyone sort of signed up for a while and they're good?
You know, I think it's one always looks at what the United States market opportunity is and then the world opportunity is. At the risk of throwing silly numbers out, broadband is near ubiquitous in the United States. People are becoming increasingly familiar with subscribing to streaming services. There are, amidst the 8 million or so people on the planet, a billion plus or so who have broadband, and that number is growing. We have just begun to tap markets outside the U.S. So, and Netflix has been doing this for however long they've been doing it for, and they've been doing it extremely well. So we grew well, and we think, in all seriousness, that we have greater growth opportunities before us domestically and internationally. And that's either a function of where we are in our maturity and in our content development. And I should also say in our marketing effectiveness, because running these things is not just about content, it's about marketing efficiency.
Streaming is growing. A lot of runway there. Linear TV is in decline. It's been in decline for a while. There's no longer any debate about that. You guys, I think, might still have the most popular show on cable, Walking Dead.
We do, yeah. On television.
On TV.
Yeah.
It was 17 million people in season 5. Last year, it was down to, I think, 3 million. It's really shocking when you pull back, but we're sort of used to seeing it decline. But it's still a valuable business for you, right?
Sure.
You're still getting paid for both eyeballs and you're getting paid for subscribers. How do you think about managing that business while growing the other one? How do you do two things at the same time?
Yeah, it's obviously something that we think about. I guess a piece of good news in that is that our current MVPD distributors who carry and have carried our linear cable channels are now carrying almost universally our streaming services. So when we're in the room with them, they have something from us on one shelf and something else from us on another shelf. And that does create a form of harmony. And we are experimenting with various ways to utilize linear to make streaming more successful and various ways to utilize streaming to make linear more successful. So we have experimented with a linear short-term premiere and then putting a show on streaming in order to give it exposure. We can offer a linear experience post-streaming. And then I think what is most intriguing to me, which is not necessarily yet fully manifest, is that while that business is a good business, 80 million plus homes, when technology, I believe, changes in its place in the world and linear is now in some decline, I think there's a bit of an invitation for experimentation, ingenuity, and dare I say creativity with different ideas of how one approaches it and what you do with it. So we've, as you mentioned, we had American Movie Classics, classic films run up and down without commercials. We determined years ago that there was something else to do. So we made TV shows that arguably had cinematic quality, like Mad Men, Breaking Bad first, and we changed what we were doing. That, excuse the expression, game is not over. I think that there is intrigue to be had with what's occurring on linear in the future, although one's first encounter with it, when you think of it, is, oh, gee, it's in decline.
You got something up your sleeve you want to tell us about? Some experiment? Some trial?
We have a lot up our sleeves. I'll just tell you a couple of anecdotes that are just perhaps interesting. When we had, and by the way, we now on The Walking Dead have 6 shows in the franchise, whether it's Star Wars, Star Trek, or something else, one can debate, but there are fully 6 shows in the Walking Dead universe, World Beyond, Fear, and some very interesting ones in development. But we started something called Talking, which was a talk show after.
Yes.
So we did Talking Dead, Talking Fear, Talking Bad, and people loved it, which I think is informative and has application for linear.
Let's hire Chris Hardwick or someone to talk about the show that you just saw. You liked it enough. You're going to keep listening to us talk about it. Bravo does a version of it with Andy Cohen.
Right. So, but that's not the be all and end all. The comment I was going to make is there are formats yet to be born, and they may have aspects that we see now in closed end social audio like Community. They may have aspects that are slightly more interactive, and they may have all sorts of things that occur that are not necessarily directly suited for streaming.
Take a quick minute to hear from an advertiser, and we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline, because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
And we're back. Some of the big streamers, Disney in particular, HBO, I had Jason Kilar on, run from Warner Media a couple weeks ago. He's quite clear. He said, we're going to be moving more resources from linear to streaming. We're going to put our splashiest stuff on streaming. Are you guys at that same point, or are you saying, look, obviously Walking Dead is still a cable TV show. Is the next Walking Dead going to be a streaming only product, or do you think that'll be on linear?
Yeah, you know, I don't think of it as necessarily splashiest or resource. I do think of it, I hope we do, as applicability. Meaning, if a show is, if its nature invites the viewer to watch it in sequence at their desire, meaning binge, then I think streaming is a more hospitable environment. And we had a lot of our dramas were binge-worthy, but that technology was not ubiquitous. So it was nicer to sit down and watch a certain show in sequence and to binge it. There are other shows that you want to wander into. So
I'm trying to figure out how you determine that. It seems like any show that I would want to watch, I would also want to binge eventually, no?
Well, look, out of our terrain, I'll just mention it. It's not our terrain, but you certainly want to watch sports live, and you certainly want to watch news live. You don't want to watch that later and binge it, right? So I just think there are unforeseen formats that will occur. Talking was a simple one that's within our house, where it was critical that it be on and that it be live and it not be bingeable because people were calling in and you wanted to be part of that community. So I think that there will be formats that are suitable for linear TV. And I'm not sure that people are spending, frankly, in my view, enough time investing and investigating what they might be. Additionally, just one other anecdote is the relationships of different platforms will change. So we have a deal with Charter Spectrum Communications, and we are now co-producing a drama with them, and we're windowing it. And so we now have a multi-part relationship with Charter Spectrum. By the way, the script is spectacular, in my view. So it's a very exciting script. And we are co-producing with our distribution partner. We'll own it with them, and we'll sequence it across different platforms in a way that we think makes sense for us and for them and for all MVPDs. So there's formats, and then there's also structural relationships that are they're emerging already. That is a prime example of a change in structure of who finances and who presents. And frankly, it happens to be this tremendously exciting one to me.
Have you announced what show that is? Or are you delivering?
Yeah, I think we have.
Okay.
Yeah, we can give you all the information on it. It's basically a sci-fi show. The source material was written by a guy named Hugh Howey. It was adapted. It's somebody in space and on the moon, but it's nasty and lonely and isolated and challenging.
That sounds like my
kind
of thing.
So in a way, it's way cool. It's sort of interior, but it's interior in space. So I admit to being a little in love with the script. Yeah.
I like Moon a lot. So that sounds like Moon. long a money conversation that you and I have had repeatedly, and it seems like it only gets more acute. You've been competing with the Netflixes of the world, and the amount of money they're spending only increases, and the amount of competitors who are also throwing money at stuff only increases. So when you are going for a project, you're competing for a project, you cannot compete on money. And I've heard you make the Walmart boutique argument before, but it seems like at some point someone says, that's great, but I'm going to take more money. And or, by the way, I know my audiences know how to stream. And frequently when I talk to people who do programming, they say Netflix is still, you can call it Walmart, but everyone knows you have the most eyeballs on your stuff if it's on Netflix. Everyone does seem to find it. So how are you convincing talent, a creative person who has the rights to something to work with you instead of name your streamer?
Yeah. So I think I think what we say is something I hope is quite true, which is that wonderful to have one show produced by a streaming service and to be paid for it. I think it's the case that when we do something for, call it AMC, we put it in the front of the store in the window, and we make sure that no one misses it. And I think that's slightly different from an algorithm that recommends something. And I think that the services, some of the services you talk about, are producing so abundantly that I think the creators may sometimes feel that although the algorithm is serving that purpose in a certain way, it is not in the front of the store. Yep. And so we do put things in the front of the store, and there's a benefit to that, I think. And so I think we are an attractive place for that reason, because we offer that sort of showcase.
What does the world look like when you're trying to get, keep the store analogy going, when you're trying to get store space, shelf space at Roku or any of the other distributors that are sitting in between you, the programmer, and even though you're going direct to consumers, I'm still usually, there's still a Roku involved or an Amazon involved or an Apple involved. Has that landscape changed in terms of the leverage the distributors are using, what they're asking for?
You know, so to date, it has been a tremendously sympathetic relationship, notwithstanding what someone may have chosen to write about a bit ago. I mean, we have really enjoyed, frankly, I don't know how else to say it, remarkable support from the companies you mentioned, from Amazon, from Apple, from Roku, and amazing harmony. And they have been progressive, and they've been thoughtful, and in some cases, they have led us to do things that we otherwise wouldn't have done. So that part of our world has been very rewarding and, frankly, of course, beneficial, because there's an awful lot of humans in America who are on those platforms and on those devices.
Earlier this year, there was the GameStop frenzy on Reddit. We talked about it, and you guys got roped into it, we think. Because the Redditors decided they wanted to send AMC to the moon, and your stock, which is AMCX, also went to the moon for a day or two. Walk me through what that was like. Were you aware of what was going on, or did you wake up one day and your stock had doubled or tripled and you had to ask somebody why that happened?
Well, there are people I work with smarter than me on the subject of shorting, and people who are on different platforms. And the relationship between people on different platforms and shorts. But suffice it to say, I don't think I was the leading expert. Uh-huh. I think I caught the remedial class and understood it.
But you're a curious person. I mean, it must have been fascinating for you. Scary. Or maybe you tell me.
It was fascinating. What I meant to say is I'm not a leader in how to describe the dynamics of hedge funds and how banks work with hedge funds and the relationship between Reddit and shorts and the percentage of shorts versus not. So I wouldn't give that lecture. It was quite intriguing. I guess if I might offer a more serious comment about us, I think our company has been undervalued for a long time, Peter. I really mean that. And so we've seen some share price escalation post all that peculiarity. And I still don't think that the world is understanding how much growth opportunity we have in the combination of streaming and linear with our content, how much the world market can reward us, and how our model has costs that are sensible and sustainable for what we want to do with the composition of revenue in the company against cost. And I think it will be revealed. I think it's the performance will be in evidence.
I've never gotten anyone to answer this question. That's a bad way of putting it. I'll ask it and we'll see what happens. It seems like the value in your company will be as an acquisition one day, that someone who's running a big streamer will say, these guys have done well with this streaming service, these niches they built up, and I need more scale. I'm going to buy it. I'm their library. I want their service, whatever it is. I'm sure that bankers are knocking on your door all the time. And I'm wondering how you think about sort of making yourself potentially attractive to another suitor while doing the day-to-day running the business. It seems like, I'm sure the answer is, we got to run the business. That's all we can do. On the other hand, it's got to be enormously distracting. And I'm sure you think about it all the time. I mean, Jeff Bukas at what was then called Time Warner deliberately stripped everything out to make that thing more attractive to an eventual sale. So, I mean, there has to be at least some portion of your brain power or day where you spend time thinking about that.
Well, it's not an unfamiliar question.
Thank you.
But if I disappoint you, I'm sorry, because we've been asked the question more frequently and perhaps longer than some. Yeah. And we've had the same answer, which is an honest answer, which is, and I think it's evident in our behavior, which is that we think that we can provide a great return for shareholders by running a business that is smartly constructed with full recognition of what's going on in the media world, not denying any of it. And that we can craft and have crafted now a trajectory for ourselves that really does take what we've done historically and take advantage of it. And hopefully some skill set in people who I work with who are advanced in this area of content creation, and now marketing to groups of communities. And we can be, and I'll use hyperbolic words, the worldwide leader in targeted streaming. And that's not audacious, and that's not excessive. That's a very realistic and pragmatic path for us to go down and to achieve. And so we focus on that. As you might imagine, it takes time and it takes energy to do it.
Yeah. There was a wave of consolidation. Everyone listening to this podcast knows what it was, but we'll tick off some of it. AT&T, Warner Media, Disney, Fox, Discovery Scripts, Viacom, CBS. And then it stopped or has paused. Do you think it restarts again?
I'm not certain whether it does or doesn't. Those transactions all had logic. I guess I would refer you to a banker or a media macroeconomist.
Let me ask you one more banking question then. The big tech guys are spending a lot, but they haven't gone out and bought a traditional company. They haven't bought a library, unless I'm missing something. We keep hearing it's going to happen. It's going to be Sony. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be MGM. Doesn't happen. Do you think that, what's your sense of what the tech guys want to do and how and why they haven't gone out and bought any traditional assets?
I have my own, only my observations,
yeah.
Peter, which begin with, it is worth, you're more a student of it than I am, first acknowledging that they each have different, excuse the word, ecosystems, meaning some have shopping, some have devices, some have design, some have social interaction at their core, which probably leads them to different places. What seems to have been consistent, undeniably, historically, is that they have chosen to develop the wherewithal internally to do it. And there's logic to that, to my mind, because I think it bears a relationship to their other activities that it is not bolt-on-able in the most simple manner. So if someone has one group of cable channels, for instance, and you want to operate with more and you can find efficiencies or synergies, that's a fairly, in a way, straightforward plot. Mm-hmm. And others, and they've done it, and they've done it successfully. If you have a unique operation that has various differences in its fundamental sort of reason for being an organization, then I think there's perhaps less simplicity in acquiring something.
Yeah, that'll make sense. And then you look at Amazon went out and bought Whole Foods.
Right.
Although, to be fair, they were in groceries unsuccessfully for a long time. Not super happy what they've done to Whole Foods, but we'll say that for a different podcast.
I admit to being more focused on our own little acquisitions that have provided big benefit to us. We bought the streaming company that brought us Acorn and All Black. We just recently made a strategic investment in a company called Shaftesbury that gives us content for the Acorn services. And so, and we purchased a controlling interest in BBC America some years ago. So that's not M&A at that scale, but it's been very beneficial for us.
Last question. I know you are a fan of entertainment. You like all this stuff. You're into it. What is the non-AMC networks movie, TV show that you're consuming right now that you're enjoying, that you want to recommend?
Oh, God. It's perhaps reflexive on my part that I answer with our own shows. I have to pause.
Yeah, we can wait. It's a podcast.
No, I haven't. I admire and watch. I think Bridgerton was masterful in being both well done and mass. I think The Crown is very nicely done. I just started to watch the Kate Winslet miniseries on HBO Max, which is, I think,
Mayor of Easttown.
Yeah.
Yes, a lot of Philadelphia Delco accents, I guess.
But damn good. I mean, really quite good. But I will, I hope I don't, sounds like a plug. I'm completely consumed with this series called The Restaurant that's on our service, Sundance Now.
So it's a foreign language.
Yeah, it's Swedish.
Swedish.
It's
okay.
Swedish, and it sounds alienating. It's actually, it's completely accessible and spectacular.
Completely accessible. I will check it out. Josh Sapan, I look
for... maybe not for your children. Maybe not for your kids
they're
not ready for subtitles yet.
They don't want to watch anything that's on traditional TV with like the exception of like two things, like Bob's Burgers. Beyond that, they're lost to YouTube, sadly. So unless you guys are programming YouTube, then they're not going to be watching anyone's shows. Josh, great to talk to you. Look forward to seeing you in person. Thank you.
Hey, Peter, thanks so much.
Thanks again to Josh Sapan. Thanks again to Joel and Jelani, who edited and produced the show. Thanks again to our sponsors, who let you hear this show for free. You don't have to subscribe. Should we sell something? Let us know. Maybe there's a bonus version of this podcast some of you would want to pay for. Maybe not. This is Recode Media. Thank you for listening. See you next week.